Hey, we're chatting with four-time NHRA champion driver Antoine Brown, and they are in Minnesota. Antoine, welcome back to the state of Minnesota.
It's always good to be back here. You know, we always come here to Minnesota. It's always good time, especially when we race up at Brainerd. And we always get to stop here in Minneapolis and see the tour of the city. And doing a little stuff this weekend, we got to hang out at the Vikings training camp with the Patriots out there. And then I get to throw out the first pitch this evening also, too, in the Twins game. So going back, I was always a stick and ball sports guy. I played every sport there was in high school. So this is right up my alley from football. I even played soccer at an early age, but I played football, basketball, ran track and field, and played baseball. So that's right up my neck of the woods. So just feels good to be here. And the weather is going to be absolutely gorgeous this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. It's one of the nice things about Minnesota in the summer, that the weather is usually pretty good. 43rd annual NHRA our Nationals, and we're going to talk about that in a second. Are you nervous about the first pitch, though, tonight? You got to throw a strike, man.
I'm going to bring the heat, man. You know, I don't want to heat his glove up when I throw it in there, but I'm going to try to get across the plate there. We might cruise across about 70 miles an hour, yeah. Let him feel a little smoke on it so you hear that little pop.
Yeah,
you know, we ain't going to bounce the ball. That's the game. We don't want to bounce the ball.
Well, if it comes in at 70, that's only about 20% of the speed you'll be driving this weekend at like 320, right?
Absolutely. You know, the cool part is we always love coming up here. Actually, we broke the record here in Brainerd several years ago. We're the first car to go in the 3.6-second range here at the racetrack, and we went on to win the championship that year. I think that was in 2015 or 16. And I remember going 330-plus miles an hour. Now we're doing 340 mile an hour to mark now. So we're really close to up in 339. And maybe this weekend, the conditions right, we could pop that 340 off.
You know, it's funny, too. I think people that will watch on TV especially, they'll see, you know, the Top Fuel, the funny car, those guys go. And when you guys hit it, I mean, if you're in person, you know that the race has begun. It's quick, but I think people might think, well, it's a quarter mile, it's on concrete, and it's the same weekend to weekend. But that's couldn't be further from the truth, right? Weather conditions, surface, all kinds of things go into how fast you guys can go.
Yeah, absolutely true. Like the thing about it is for us to go quick and fast, we need the right conditions where the sun's got to be behind the clouds. The track can't – you don't want the track to really be over 90 degrees. You want to be in that 80 – about 75 to 85-degree range you want the racetrack to be. Pretty much 80 to 90 is optimum because it gives a little give to it. And then you don't want no humidity. You want the humidity to be down. The drier the air, we always say you could burn the logs a lot quicker. That means burn the fuel quicker. And if we can get all that in together, we can make our own power by speeding the blowers up. But then that means we can feed it clutch. And when we feed it clutch, and you hear that motor come down the middle of the racetrack real quick, where you hear it go, Rom! And hear it in the middle where it really gets down to that grind. And then all of a sudden, look at the scoreboard. You're going to see something special come up there. And the air's got to be crisp. It's got to be cool, crisp, dry. And the track is right. Hold out. Those what you need to make a premier, we call it triple A throwdown run.
You know it when you hit it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You definitely know it because you feel the car pull in every increment. When you leave the starting line, it'll hit you in the chest, but then it just keeps accelerating. It doesn't slow down. It, like, you know, when we get to the hotter tracks, you got to pause the car in some areas so you don't spin what we call smoking the tires. You don't spin the tires. So when the track gets real good, we can keep on feeding the clutch and making the car accelerate. So we don't pause at anywhere down the racetrack. And you feel just got a constant pull all the way to the finish line. And it's just it's one of those feelings where you go, oh, here we go, here we go, here we go. Because you keep on feeling getting pushed back in your seat all the way down the racetrack.
So if you get a cooler day or even early evening, because sometimes you're under the lights too, and the surface is right, is Brainerd one of those facilities? You mentioned you can lay down a pretty good run.
Oh, yes, yes. Like Brainerd is definitely one of the facilities. Even if it gets a little warm during the day, we run at 6:45, 7 o'clock on Friday night. By the time they run the fuel cars, we won't hit the track until about 7:30, 7:45. We just make it right before the sun goes down. And at that time, it gets right because the air gets, for whatever reason, you're up so far north. As soon as that sun starts going down, that temperature starts dropping dramatically. And once that happens, the crew chiefs, Boy, you see their eyes start getting big. They start licking their chops. Like, you know, like, it's time to eat tonight. It's time to eat tonight.
No doubt about it. How are the fans here in Minnesota when you see them out? Because I think for folks that haven't been to a race, NHRA is really a fan-friendly event. So how have you found your interactions with fans to be here in Minnesota?
Oh, it's probably one of the best places and atmospheres we go out and tour, period. And what I mean by that is you got to remember these guys and gals come out. And they save up their money to come out for this full weekend. And that's one thing about the NHRA experience that no other professional sport does. Every ticket is a pit pass. You get to buy a GA ticket from a reserve seating ticket, or you can be in the suites. And every ticket gets you access into the pits where we put our race machines together. And they're able to walk up and see it, smell it, feel it, the thunder of the motors when they wrap in the throttle. And I think for me, as I was a little kid, that's what drew me so much to this sport, because when my dad and uncle brought me around the racetrack to these national events, it actually got to see myself say, man, I'm here. This is what it feels like. This is what it feels to be like. This is the energy and synergy that's in the pits. It's like seeing somebody that loves basketball and you get to sit inside of the Minnesota Timberwolves locker room.
Yeah, it'd be like going in at halftime and watching adjustments
what they do. And once you're able to see that and feel that, it helps you put in the mindset that you can actually be there one day. And you know what it takes to be there. You know the work it takes. It knows the talent it takes. And I think that's what makes our sport so, so special. And if you've never been and you go out, you're going to get hooked like a big mouth bass. You're going to be like, oh, my God, I never knew it was like this.
There's no question. I think that's probably the underrated part of it. You watch it on TV, it's one thing. And I think there's a lot of sports like this. There's nothing quite like it in person. But I don't know if there's anything that's more like that than the NHRA, that if you watch it on TV, it's one thing, and it's fine.
Yep.
And it's entertaining. And if you're thumbing through and you find it, you're going to be entertained. But when you go, now you found something, right?
Oh, it's one of those deals where – it's like nobody can explain it. Like, if you were on a football field and you saw, like, a lineman rushing in and sacking a quarterback, and you're right on the field and you hear the crack of when they crack them and pop on the ground, TV tries to capture it. It can't capture it.
Can't.
You know when you're at the field and you're watching these training camps, you go to practice, and you see somebody get popped, you're like, oh, you go, oh. You can see it from TV and go, oh, but it's really oh if you see it in a person. And that's what our sport does. I mean, we're a number two on the Richter scale. We'll set off car alarms a miles away from the racetrack because we shake the ground. It's number two, shaking the ground. And when you're on the start line, if you've never been, if you're standing next to the cars when they take off, it'll make you drop to your knees.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people go, I never knew it was like that. Like, it'll try to blow the clothes off your body is almost like what it does.
I was at an NHRA event in St. Louis when I worked in St. Louis from 01 to 06.
Okay.
I think
yes.
I've interviewed you, in
yes.
fact. You were on motorcycles then. But the track manager brought me down. Budweiser's big there.
Mm-hmm.
So Kenny Bernstein and Larry Dixon, Miller Lite, against Budweiser.
Budweiser,
and I stood right behind where they take off. And when they you'll never get used to it. Like, even when you know that you guys are hitting the throttle, the
uh-huh.
people in the stands are still going to jump because it just is like two bombs going off. So they take off,
mm-hmm.
and the track manager looks over and, what'd you think? And I'm like, it took my breath away. As the cliche, and he's mm-hmm. like, actually, it literally did. He goes, they suck in so much oxygen, it sucks it right out of your lungs. And I'm like, is that true? And I don't know if it's true. I believed him, but it was crazy.
Well, I think what happens is, I don't know if they're going to suck the oxygen because the blower's in front of you. If it did suck the oxygen out of you, you won't be able to breathe, period. But the thing about it, he was going a little bit far on that.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that I think what it does is the, like, you know, just the, like, the literally hit of it, the compulsion of it just going off, like it goes off so hard, it hits you.
Oof.
It's like you hit it and you feel it. When it takes off, it feels like it hits you. You go like, like you just got hit with a wind charge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like somebody's hit you with a shadow punch. And you're like, and it hits you in the gut. You're like, what just happened to me? You feel like you lost your breath, but it actually shakes your body. It actually sends your body a trauma pulse.
It does, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's what it does to you.
And like I said, even now you know it. So like the first time, I promise, if you've never been there as a fan and you go, mm-hmm. the first time you guys jump the throttle, you're going to jump as a fan. You're just going to, it's going to startle you how big it is. Then, even when you're watching it, now you know what to expect. It's still, you still jump. What's it like in the car? So you're watching the tree go, and then you're ready to go. What's that sensation and that feeling? I'm sure you've been asked a million times to describe that sensation.
Well, I would tell you that when you're sitting in a car, the best way I could describe it to people is that it's so traumatic. It feels like you were in a car accident, but you didn't hit nothing. You know what I mean? Like when you actually, anybody out there has ever been in a car accident, you know it's like when it's go through, when you see something about to hit you or you're about to hit something, everything goes, oh, Lord, I'm about to get hit, or you're about to hit something, you go, oh, it's coming. And then everything happens so fast, but when you're going through it, it feels like slow motion. You're like, oh, when you hit the gas pedal, it hits your body, and it sends that traumatic shock through it where you go, oh, I just hit the gas. And you're like, oh, Lord. It's hit, just hit me in my chest and my gut. Oh, I feel like I can't breathe. Why does it feel like something's squeezing the life out of me? But I'm still trying to hold on. And then it's just like sucking you down the seat, and your head's trying to bend down, but you're trying to hold it up. And then right when you think that you got it, it's like, all right, the G should start falling off now. It hits you again. And then you're like, oh, I can't believe this. And then it hits you again and sets you in a seat even deeper, and you feel like your stomach's touching your backbone even more. Then it goes 1-to-1 at literally 2.9 seconds in a run, where you reach 300 miles an hour in 2.9. Your fastest production car, let's say like it's like a Tesla S or whatever, is in 0-to-60. It goes from 0-to-60 in 1.8 seconds. It's blazing fast, right? It goes... Our car in 1.8 seconds, we're not from 0 to 60. We're at 200 miles an hour. You follow what I mean?
Wow.
So, and at that point, we're probably like almost 5 Gs. Literally at 2.9, where our clutch goes 1-to-1, we're pulling over 6 Gs at 300 miles an hour.
Wow. So you're riding the clutch for the first part of the drive. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, for the first 600 feet, you're literally slipping a clutch and you're bringing it in. Finally, goes 1-to-1 at 2.9, 2.8 seconds.
And you hear athletes a lot of times talk about when they really get good is when the game slows down. Is that what you mean when you say, I mean, it's all under 4 seconds. If it's a good run, it's under 3 point what, you know, what's a great run. But you said it feels like it's slow motion. So you've won 4 national championships. Does the game slow down for you, even though 4 seconds is so fast?
Well, you get so used to everything. You know what I mean? So for me, it's just like the best way to explain it to you is like everybody, for all the baseball fans out there, is like somebody stepping up to the plate. You know, you take somebody that never hit a baseball, you throw them a 70-mile-an-hour fastball pitch, you know, which they're throwing at in ninth grade now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Right?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Right? You won't even be able to hit the ball,
yeah.
Right? Even if it's a softball. Then you go up to it until you get muscle memory to be able to hit it. But think about how to hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You can't see it coming.
Right.
Somebody's throwing that out their hand, right?
Yes.
So when you think about it, but players can hit it is because they've seen it so many times. They know it's coming. They know what it is. And they even slow it down so much in their eye, they can even see the way the stitching is coming at them. They know if it's a curveball, if it's a changeup, you know what I mean? Or if it's a fastball. They could tell by the way the stitching's coming at them. And when you're looking at that and you know, you're like, all right, I got it. Well, that's the same way as for us driving our race car, is that the more that we do it, and, you know, I've been driving Top Fuel now, this is my 17th season, is that I can tell, and when I hit the gas pedal, and I can tell when things are happening, what's going on, and my body just slows it way down, where I'm like, oh, okay, it's about to do this. Oh, it's doing that. Oh, it's pushing to the right a little bit. Let me bring it back to the left. And you just start, you're trying to guide this unguided missile, and you're just trying to stay in front of it because it's so easy to be so far behind it.
Right. Wow. It's amazing. We mentioned the fan experience, and we've talked about that and the pit pass part of it. A ticket gets you into the pitch. You mill around. You can watch guys. Sometimes you might even see a driver walk by. But there's so much science, right, to what you guys do with engines. And are you guys still doing the thing where you're taking the whole motor apart after every run and then reassembling it and thrash that thing in and
out?
I mean, to me, if you've never been to one, that's worth the price of admission. Just go watch a crew. This high technology, I mean, there's guys on computers that can can tell where what's going on and what's not going on and what you need to do. You take the whole motor apart and then put it back together all again for another, you know, 300 and, like you said, 40-mile run.
The crazy part is people think that we're crazy because we work on a car and tear it all the way back down, rebuild the whole engine. We tear the engine all apart, and we do it literally in about 35, 40 minutes to go up for a 3.6-second run. And a 3.6-second or 3.7-second run makes or break you, because if you're trying to run 365 and you ran 370, you're like, all that, man, and we still didn't go quick enough. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So it's like hero to zero, and that's what humbles our sport. But that access, that's what the fans get to go see. They get to go see us get back to the pit, especially on race day on Sunday. Mm-hmm. If you win the race, you did that four times in one day. You did
tore
it four down, yes.
Tore it down, put it back together. Yeah.
You got four rounds of racing. You didn't put that car together four times. Like, tear it down, put it back together. Tear it down. And I'm talking about they're putting rods, pistons. They're putting new sets of heads on. They put a different manifold. They put a new blower on every run. You take all this stuff in and out and put clutch disc in and out and put the clutch all back together and put it together. I mean, it is a spectacle. It's actually a treat to see. It'll blow your mind, just the cadence that these guys and girls in the pit, because there's a lot of females that work on these cars too now, that make this happen, man. It's like, it's unbelievable what they do and their talent and the skill set to do it that quick, but to have it perfect where nothing's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, think about it. Like, it's not just about the speed, but it's about the precision to make everything right and to make the engine run right at the same time without failures.
And you think about, you were talking in 3.6 seconds, the margin of error, you know, if you get it, if you hit it right on the rebuild, that's the difference between moving on to the next round and packing up and heading out, right?
Oh, yeah, because when you come in, there's no mulligans. There's no do-overs. Once you mess up on Sunday, you're done for the day. You're packing up. You know what I mean? Qualifying, you go back and forth and you press hard, try to make it right. But the coolest part for us is that we get to go in there, and the sad part is the only thing a driver can do is screw it up. You know what I mean? So I can't take credit. Goes, yeah, man, I got two more hundreds out of it.
Yeah.
No, the car's going to run when it runs.
Yeah.
Only thing we could do is take away from it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but the coolest part is for the fans, when they get to come in and see all this firsthand, they become part of the team. They become part of the process. What other sport makes the fan a part of the process of winning on Sunday?
I don't think there is one.
No, but our sport, the fans come right up to the ropes and say, hey, man, y'all go get them. We got you. Hey, it's okay. You smoked the tires. You still got around to go get it. Like, I mean, they're in your corner and they're a cheering section, not up in the stands, but in their pits to motivate y'all to get it done, to get back up there to make it happen.
Amazing. 43rd Annual NHRA Nationals Brainerd International Raceway. There are still some tickets left. You can go to the NHRA webpage to buy those. We're with Antron Brown, four-time NHR champion, the reigning champion, in fact. He won it last year. Tell me about your year this year up to this point.
Oh, this year, we start off really good. We start off with a win in Gainesville. We have a win, and we have two runner-ups where we made it to three finals, and the competition is even tougher this year. It gets tougher every year. Everybody can win a championship. Everybody's doing their homework to do make it happen. And we led the points for a little bit the first several races, and then we stayed up in the top three for the most part. And then we had a spree where we were trying some stuff and went through a three-race spree where we lost first round, so it dropped us back to six. But now we're on the mend. We're coming off of Sonoma with a runner-up, and we climbed back up to fifth place in points. And fourth and third are only less than 60 or 80 points out. So if we have a real good race here, we could climb another two spots. And that's the game plan and go into Indy, where it's points and a half. Their last race before we race the sixth race of a playoff for a championship. And we're already locked in for the playoff for the championship right now. So that's the good part. But our main focus is to try to finish these last two races out strong and go in the top three in the points, so we give ourselves a better shot at repeating as a champion.
Who you mentioned your dad. I know he, when you guys were growing up in New Jersey, he toyed around with some drag racing, and that kind of got you involved as a young man. And you were working on cars when, what, you were 14 or 15 years old?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My dad and uncle played the okey-doke on me as a kid. And what I mean by that is that my grandpa, we had our own family business, a septic tank service with excavating deals. So I grew up racing dirt bikes, and I never forget, it was always a ploy to their madness, okay? So I had a dirt bike, so I had to build my own dirt bike track. So I was on the front end loader. So they taught me how to work the front end loader and the backhoe, right? And once I learned how to work it, all of a sudden I found myself on job sites.
They put you to work.
I was working it. It's like, yeah, well, that's practice. We got you practice, right? So it brings up the next moral of my story that makes it even better. We used to go racing with them. Say, hey, you want to come watch us race? So they're racing their drag cars, right? So as soon as I learned, I never forget, I was 12 years old. I rebuilt my first dirt bike engine, and I used a service manual. And my dad goes, this thing ain't going to ever run again because I know it's time for a freshen up. And my dad came home the next day, saw that it was running, and it looked brand new. He goes, you did that. You made it look like that, too. I go, yes, sir. And my dad goes, okay. Then the next night, I'm helping him rip the engine out of our little sportsman bracket car, which was a 1927 Ford Roadster built by Brogy Race Cars out in California. And then I was just able to wipe them down. I could take the tires on and off and mount tires, but I couldn't work on the engine or the transmission. Well, now I could work on the engine and transmission because he saw that I was mechanically inclined. I went from a wiper to a mechanic. And I was like, that was the proudest moment of my life where I was able to help my dad and uncle with those types of things. And I think that's what really made me fall in love with the technical side of sport is when you learn how to work on things and know how they work, it makes you that much better as a driver.
When did you, and you started racing motorcycles, when did you realize that this could become a career for you?
Oh, man, I tell you, it's just something I always dreamed about. Never knew if I was ever going to make it. And I was very fortunate where I got hurt really bad racing motocross where I thought I was going to be a professional motocross racer. It's coming up through the ranks, like, you know, qualify for Netherlands several times and went down and on the amateur youth national side. And then I got hurt really bad. And then I start playing around with drag bikes and street bikes, figuring and just going to see if I could drag race with my family. And I met Troy Vincent, who's a, you know,
former NFL,
former NFL Pro Bowler. I played for the Philadelphia Eagles for the most stint of his career, and he owned my first race team, and it was called Team 23. It was football number, and I owe everything to Troy and my cousin Tommy, who married him, Tommy Vincent. They really helped pave the way for me where I got in the sport of NHRA drag race and I raced for them. And then they were in for about 3 years and they got out of it and then I had to take it over. And they go, all right, well, if you want to do it, you're going to have to do it on your own and take it over and make it happen. And once I got in there, I never stopped. And here I am today just living that dream, man, just never stopping, not just driving or racing, but the last 3 years I own my own race team. AB Motorsports. So comes full circle from being a rider to a driver, winning championships for other people, to taking it underneath our own umbrella and winning a championship for AB Motorsports last year. That was truly, truly special. And winning six races last year, that was special.
Yeah, an amazing story for sure. Who are some racers as you were kind of coming up through the ranks, both in cycles and then, in Top Fuel that kind of helped you along the way, do you think?
Started off when I came in motorcycle, it was a huge mentor of mine was Dave Schultz, and he mentored us when Troy bought his own team. We were kind of a satellite team underneath of him, and his professionalism. And I never forget, I built my first pro stock motorcycle with Dave before I got to race it, and it kind of set a bar high on me to understand what was happening, what was going on, and it really taught me the level that I needed to be on to be successful out there. And Troy was a huge mentor. And then the next one that came along the way in my race career, Mark Pizer was my other crew chief that really helped me and showed me the mechanics of these motorcycles and how to start machining stuff and how to weld. And he was teaching me all these different things. I mean, it was awesome. And then after that was Mark Oswald that came aboard where I started racing with him my second year in Top Fuel, where his knowledge and his ability to engineer and make things was beyond anybody I've ever been with. And it was one of those deals where if you want to do something, study it, learn the science of it, and apply it. Those are the three things.
Yeah.
Learn it, then do the science, and apply it. And that's something that Mark taught me a long time ago. And I've been with Mark for the majority of my years of with Top Fuel. I won all four championships with Mark and Brian Corradi. And Brian Corradi is just a man of just straight-up common sense and ingenuity. He doesn't take no for an answer. He figures it out. And all three of those gentlemen, and with Brad Mason, my current crew chief now, we've been together for 17 years of my Top Fuel career. and we've done everything together. We put the late hours in, and we always tell them if you want to win or out-achieve somebody, you just got to outwork them.
Do all drag racers have as much input and help with the motors as you do?
Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them drive, tune the car, and they drive the truck to the racetrack. And I've done it all. I mean, when I run my own pro stock bike team, I drove the semi trucks, the rigs. I put everything together. I drew stuff up on CAD, learned how to program, like, you know, write the programs for CNC machines. Did a little bit of that. Never mastered that at all. I need to do a lot more of that. And I learned how to weld, and I need to hold something together or do something like that. And it was all through trial and error, through experience. But I found out what my gifts were. I'm a jack of all trade, master of none. But I am my gift is going out there selling and representing corporate brands out there. And I think that's what I bring to the table for the team. And also, I'm a competitor at nature. I don't care what it is. I'm going to compete at anything and everything that's around us. We could be in this podcast booth right now.
Yeah.
Me and you are going to be pitching quarters against the wall before we leave.
You're ready to go.
That's right. Let's go. How much you got? How much you got, Mike?
I'm in radio. I don't have enough. It's not worth it for you. I wanted to ask you about a couple of guys who are kind of, I mean, there's many drag racing stories in Minnesota, but Warren Johnson and Greg Anderson, both kind of Minnesota born and bred, Duluth and Virginia, Minnesota. And they've had, I mean, they're, you could argue, two of the top, you know, 20 all-time drag racers, probably, right?
Oh, they are. Greg Anderson's on all-time win list. He surpassed Warren Johnson. Greg's second of all on the win list of NHRA. He won over 100 races.
Yeah.
Like, he surpassed Warren Johnson and Bob Glidden, which was in the 80s. I'm coming up on them right now. I am in the 80s right
You're
now.
You're 81,
I'm
80, right?
I'm 81, yeah. Right? So that was pretty cool. I was out there with Paul Cross, is it, from old school.
Yeah, Paul Krause.
Paul Krause.
For the Vikings.
Yeah, for the Vikings.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has 81 interceptions.
He does, yeah.
And I took a picture where I got a jersey swap with him today.
That's good.
Over at the training camp, and that was special. But WJ, to get back to your story, have a great story with WJ. 2004, yeah. I won Brainerd International Raceway with the U.S. Army, and WJ won that weekend. And we were sitting at the Black Bear, which is a restaurant in Brainerd, Minnesota. And I was sitting on WJ's lap. He was junkering in Cooter Brown, and I was drunk. And I was sitting on his lap, and I was like, I am sitting on the professor's lap. Get the hell out of here. I'm sitting on WJ's lap. And he's sitting there smiling. His wife Arlene's right there. And we're having a good old time, and I'm just laughing. We're cutting up jokes. And everybody around us is laughing at us and staring at us because WJ's he's serious.
Yeah.
And I'm serious when I race too, but I crack jokes all the time, have a good time. But it was the coolest deal because he was one of my heroes growing up watching Pro Stock Car. He was the professor for GM Performance Parts, you know what I mean? For years, you know what I mean? Silver and black. When I thought about Dale Earnhardt, you thought about Warren Johnson. You get what I mean? They say it, they shared the same colors.
Yeah.
Dale was the man and Warren was the man in drag racing. Dale was the man on circle track and Warren was the man on drag racing.
Yeah.
When Bob Glidden retired, Warren was hard to beat. Bob used to make everybody look bad for years.
Yeah, Bob, you know, was, I mean? He's top five, you probably know? All time, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but then you got Greg Anderson.
Yeah.
Another student of the game, came from WJ. He was WJ's. That's the thing I tell about people. If you want the opportunity, put yourself out and around. That's what Greg Anderson did. He worked for Warren as a mechanic on the car, as a crew member. Then he went off and did his own deal, and then he started racing. And he became the world champ, the man, Greg Anderson. Isn't it crazy how it all goes? Like, greatness follows greatness.
Yeah, well, and what a story. And two Minnesotans who have had a huge impact on the sport. I want to ask you about a couple of other folks. Tony Stewart has now jumped into the fray here in drag racing. One, what's your thought on that? I mean, he's been pretty good, but here's a guy from NASCAR. Well, actually, he was from Indy first and then NASCAR and everything else. Probably brought a few new eyeballs to the sport. Your thoughts on Tony Stewart?
Tony, I tell you what, man, that man could drive anything. And I learned that by admiring him because I'm a guy of all trades. I race and drive everything. I could drive two wheels, four wheels. I don't care what it is. I could even drive land equipment, semi-trucks, whatever it is, got wheels we could drive. But what impressed me about Tony the most is that people always think people are natural drivers. What it is, Tony, no matter what he drives, he's a student to the game. He breaks down the science of what he's driving, figures out why, how, and then he does it. Mm-hmm. You follow me? And he came in drag racing and did that exact same thing. And he took to the top fuel car like a duck takes to water. And, you know, it's like anybody else. You could still race and win, but you're still behind the car. Now he's been racing so much where he's with the car. And when I saw the first couple things we got in, just like all of us did, I went through the same thing too. It was like I could still race to win, but I was just like, damn, I don't know what the heck happened.
But I won. Yeah.
But I won. Like, exactly. Trust me. My first 2 years were like that. You know what I mean? And people go, that kid's good. I said, I was just leaving on time, and I was keeping it between the cones. I didn't want to go in the other lane. That's all I could do. And Tony, he's came in here, and he's broke it down. You can see all the different cars he's racing now, driving Pro Stock car. No different than me driving Pro Mod, driving Pro 275, racing bracket cars. I don't care what it is. We just like to race, man. And Tony, and the thing about it is that he does not like to lose, and you can see that. And I put him on a trailer several times, and he's put me on a trailer a few times too now, man, because he came on where he had the points lead in our category for majority of this year, and Langdon just took it over. And it was myself back and forth, and then I think Langdon took it from me, and then Tony took it from Langdon, and Langdon's got it back now, so... And it's a dogfight right now. The top five right now, the top six actually, we're all very close within 200 points. And if somebody nails it right and a couple other ones have bad races, it could flip-flop any kind of way.
Right. You're still in this, right? Yeah, question.
Oh, yeah. When we go to countdown, the points get reset. So yeah. So I forget how many points I'm out. I think I'm like 140 or something or 160 points out, which is still very doable. You have one. The first runner has one bad race. We can make 80 points up in one race. So it's really close no matter which way you look at it right now.
A couple of other folks I want to ask you about. John Forrest. Now, he's a funny car driver, so you guys probably haven't gone head-to-head, but no pun intended, he's such a force in this sport, and now his family is obviously fully invested in it. I've interviewed him many, many times, and he's always been so gracious. Is he like that in real life, too?
Oh, John is what you see.
Yeah.
He cannot – let me tell you something. When you see a man that is that determined and that wild, okay, everybody – we ain't going to say PG-13 stuff no more. We're going to go rated R. John is wild. He's buck wild, and he's one of the men that make the sport what it is. He is a guy that – his story is so incredible. He came from driving a truck that were – like he was a logger. In California, he drove logs around, right, to becoming an NHRA funny car world champ. But during that time, people don't realize that John Forrest lost a lot his first, like, 5 or 6 years in the sport of drag racing. Like, he was a bottom feeder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's never forgot where he came from. To this day, that guy is so gracious of what he does. And he loves driving a race car. The only thing that I see right now in John – he's healed up from his accident and everything else.
Yeah, it was a tough wreck, yeah.
But to me, it seems like he's missing something in his life. And what I mean missing is because he's not driving a race car. Mm-hmm. That's how much that man loved to drive. You see people where they go, I had enough, man. I want to retire. That man did not want to retire. Mm-hmm. If he was still able to drive a race car, I will bet everything I have in the bank that John Forrest will be driving a race car still. Mm-hmm. Right now.
You're right.
Right now. When he comes to the track, like he gets excited when he sees Brittany do well. He gets excited when he sees Austin or you know, Jack Beckman winning his car. But John, he's still just like, ugh. You can see like the gas is out of him because you know why? He's not behind that seat of what made him happy.
Yeah.
That's what he lived for, brother.
That was it.
He lived to burn that nitro, you know?
Last question for you. We have the four-time champ with us here. Who are some of the guys that you compete against that you also maybe hang out with or that you're buddies with? Or is it so competitive you keep your distance?
No, we have people we hang out with all the time. Like on the racing side, week in and week out, even my off weekends, I race a lot because I take my son bracket racing. I take my son racing with Sean Langdon. So me and Sean hang out a lot. Like, we're racers through and through. We race anything and everything, and we love – got me hooked like bracket racing. That's where I came from with my dad and uncle.
Right.
And Steve Torrance was another one I used to hang out a lot with. But now Steve's got a family, some young kids, where he doesn't race at all the races no more, and it's hard to see him like I used to see him, you know, and to hang out with. And then I got my partner in crime on our Accelerate program, Angel. She's raced with us, like, you know, we race with each other through the Pro Stock Motorcycle category. And right now she's with our affiliates here. We're both sponsored by FMP, Factory Motor Parts, who does a lot with the local sport teams around here also. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's racing A-Fuel. She'll be racing Brainerd this weekend. And we're trying to transition her to Top Fuel. And she's a three-time Pro Stock Motorcycle Champion. She's outside the studio here, you know. And those are pretty much the people that I hang out with, besides hanging out with my own son racing all the time and my kids that grew up racing juniors. And I, you know, besides that, we're the ones that you see at the racetrack each and every week in and week out, man, that we hung out and that we do stuff with. And, and some other crew guys that people wouldn't know that race on the sportsman level that we all hang out, we race together too. We all get together, man. And I think that's something that's cool about the NHRA drag racing family. No matter what we race, we're always together and we help each other out. But then when we put the helmet on, we're trying to destroy each other.
No doubt.
Don't worry about it. I'm going to cut you down.
Yeah.
But you need something from the trail. When we get back from this run, I'll hook you up.
You need a part.
We got it. Even though I'll put you on a trail for the day, you can come back and race tomorrow. Yeah. We got you fixed.
That is the beauty of it. It's a family atmosphere for sure. Well, hey, we're excited to have you in Minnesota. Huge weekend in Brainerd. 43rd annual NHRA Nationals. Good luck. Let's hope the conditions are great. And go set some records, huh?
That's the game plan, Mike. Thanks for having me on, man. And hope to get to see you out there this weekend.
Absolutely. And Tron Brown, four-time NHR champion with us here on the Minnesota News Network.